Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are listening from, and welcome to page 4 of the Hot Stage Diaries. Hot Stage Diaries are part of Interop Radio, brought to you by Interop 2015. As a reminder, Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community, comes to you April 27th through May 1st, 2015, from the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. We would love it if you would join us there. Now, for more information and to register, just go to www.interop.com, and don't forget to use the code RADIO when you register. That special code, available only to those who listen to Interop Radio, will get you a great deal on your full conference registration. We've got a great show for you today. It's interesting. We've had a growing cast of InteropNet workers over the past couple of days. We started out with a small crew, grew a bit yesterday. Today, fewer and fewer empty chairs around the two long white tables that serve as desks here in the warehouse at Hot Stage. We've had a lot going on. We thought we might be pretty close to finished with the basic InteropNet last night, but as it turns out, as is so often the case, we had a few things go on, and we're using the time to make the InteropNet better and more reliable. You'll hear a little bit about one of the things that went on in a moment. Now, if you can hear the noise in the background, it's interesting because this is coming to you from a working network operations center. We're right here in the middle of the warehouse. I'm facing a long row of full-height and half-height equipment racks. I'm at one end of this long white communal table watching people open up packages, take care of cables and connectors, and go through the process of configuring all of the hardware and software that will make up the network for Interop 2015. Well, you know, I promised you a chance to meet another one of our InteropNet team members, and so we shall. This is a very interesting guy. You'll hear from him later on in the show as well, because he had a key role in one of the things that went on last night. But first, let's take a moment and meet Chris Peacock.
So I'm Chris Peacock. I'm with HP Education Services, so Hewlett-Packard. And I am the America's lead instructor for the HP networking product portfolio. So I am here at Hot Stage looking at the new technologies that are being implemented within the Interop network and the whole interoperability play of the environment is really what draws me, the expertise, the people, the environment to learn and try new things. This year I'm managing the primarily taking care of the WAN links out in the co-locations and working with the rest of the HP team here at site, Jeff and Ryan, getting the SDN, the software-defined networking environment up and ready for the show as well. So this is my fourth interop. The first year I went as an attendee. The second year I joined late with the NOC team with Jeff Enners from HP. And then the last 2 years I've been here at Hot Stage for Vegas show. It's an amazing experience being part of the team. The relaxed environment that's here, or the appearance of, as everybody's willing to share their knowledge. So the transfer information that happens from vendor to vendor or lead to intern is an amazing experience. You know, and the for me, that multi-vendor experience, the people aspect of it when you're working within the environment and building out the network here, it's great to work. You know, if somebody needs a hand moving something, you help. If somebody needs to try to troubleshoot something, the more brains, sometimes the better or worse, depends how you look at it. But, you know, usually work through things a lot quicker. and the expertise, the years of expertise that are here in the room or in this warehouse as we're building out in for during a hot stage is just, it's overwhelming.
You know, one of the things that Chris mentioned that we keep hearing over and over in these interviews that we're doing where we meet the InteropNet team members is the importance of the people. You know, it's one thing to get to be with the hardware, to get to see how all of the bits of technology actually work together. And that's something that can't be underestimated. I mean, face it, pretty much everyone here is in the technology business because they love technology. They love the challenge of making it all work together, and they love that feeling that comes when you do make things work well in a system. But with all that said, it really is all about the people. I have been around the InteROP team for a decade or so. Some people have been here every InteROP that I've been part of. There are always new people coming in. There are people who, because of job commitments or other reasons, drop out. But it is the people that you're pleased to see every time when we come to a new InteROP. Now, with the people and the team members, they're critically important, and that's why we're spending so much time meeting them. But it's also true that the equipment itself matters. And for that, we have the contributions of a lot of InteropNet partner vendors. We're going to be meeting a number of those in our Hot Stage Diaries. And in the first of those, we have a company that a lot of people might not have heard of. It's a company called InfoBlox, and they deal with some of the aspects of the network that are absolutely critical and absolutely out of sight for most people. So let's spend a few minutes and meet InfoBlox here on the Hot Stage Diaries. I'm here today with two representatives from InfoBlox. I'm speaking with Arya Birani, Vice President for Product Marketing. Arya, welcome to InteROP Radio.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And with Rick Bellina, Senior Product Marketing Manager with InfoBlox. Rick, welcome to InteROP Radio.
Thank you, Kurt. Glad to be here.
Now, I'm going to begin, gentlemen, with a question that I suspect a number of people have, and that is, what is InfoBlox? You know, you're not a company where you're likely to see your product on the shelf at Fry's or something like that. So can you give us just a little bit of information on what InfoBlox does?
Absolutely. So you're absolutely right. InfoBlox might not be a household name in some circles, but it is absolutely a critical technology and a function that virtually every enterprise network runs on. So InfoBlox is a company based out of Santa Clara, California. We have about 700 employees, and we deliver a specific technology for the network that helps connect all applications, devices, and people together. Namely, getting into the protocol conversation, it's about DNS, DHCP, and IP address management. We offer up an appliance-based solution to deliver these critical network services in enterprises.
So I'm going to ask what's going to seem like a stupid question, and I'm sure it is, but we're going to ask it anyway. When you talk about things like DNS, at its basic level, that's simply taking a string of characters and translating it into a number, an IP address. Why does it take an entire appliance to do something that seems so simple?
Well, the translation itself is a pretty simple act, and you're absolutely right. DNS is a protocol that's designed to convert a name that you and I recognize, like www.interop.com, to an IP address of the server that serves up that that service. The reason why you need an appliance is because the companies that use this type of technology require enterprise-grade, high-fidelity, high-performance, and secure versions of DNS so that they can assure that their networks are going to run quickly and without any downtime and with a secure protocol.
Okay, now you said something interesting in that. Everyone today is interested in security.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the security angle of translating from a named location or a name address mm-hmm. into an IP numerical address? Where does the security enter in?
Well, if you think about the domain name system, it was actually designed in the 1980s as a vehicle for systems and computers and networks to communicate to one another. So there was not a lot of thought given to the security elements of it because at that time computers kind of trusted each other and you didn't have the threats that you see today. But if you look at what can happen, if I could just, for example, if I'm a bad guy and if I can change the IP address that you receive when you're trying to go to your bank to a destination that I designate, I can very, very easily redirect you to a place that you didn't know you were going, and I can get information from you or I can steal data from you without you knowing. So the power of the protocol is that it connects you with your destination. The security flaws in it is that anybody that kind of can get in the middle of that and can potentially change the destination can send you to the wrong place. So it's a very, very interesting security use case, which we're seeing, by the way, attacked more and more often these days. Let me also give you another example. If you have a DNS server that comes with your normal network operating system, and yes, you can get open source DNS servers, you can put them on store-bought servers and appliances. If that appliance itself or the access to that appliance itself or that server is not secure, bad guys can get in and make all sorts of changes to the IP destination IP addresses. We can actually call that cache poisoning. That can cause all sorts of havoc. So if you're a bank or if you're a retail business, you're very interested in making sure that that particular element in the network is very secure and very protected.
We've done some stories both at Information Week and our sister publication Dark Reading about the fact that so many of the internet protocols that we depend upon were really designed in a much simpler, more trusting era when the internet was essentially a tool for communicating between researchers. Is that mm-hmm. the case with DNS? I mean, are you having to go back with products like yours and kind of backfill for some of the capabilities that were never imagined when DNS was designed originally?
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons why there is even a marketplace for enterprise vendors that are hardening that part of the infrastructure. The bad guys are very smart. They're very inventive, and every day they're finding new vulnerabilities in the systems and the networks that enable them to get to the data that they want or to bring down networks that they want. So we're absolutely going back and looking at how we can fix some of the potential vulnerabilities. With protocols that were designed that many years ago, you're going to have protocol-level vulnerabilities that going back and changing the standard is going to be very, very difficult now that it's, you know, deployed on billions of devices everywhere. So you find that hardening around the edge and vendors who are in the space, like Infoblox around DNS, are leading the charge in figuring out secure metaphors for these existing protocols.
I want to change direction just slightly to look at one of the other protocols that you mentioned, and that's DHCP. Now, as we all know, when we connect to a local area network, whether we're connecting via cabled connection or wirelessly, we depend upon the network itself to tell our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop, whatever it may be, what its address is going to be. But again, that's something that I know in my home network, I've got a very small box that does that. And in my case, I let my firewall appliance handle DHCP as well. Mm-hmm. Your boxes are not smaller than a toaster. So once again, what's the complexity there? Why is DHCP the kind of service that requires a full appliance rather than just letting a spare server somewhere take care of it.
Kurt, this is Rick. I think it's important to note that those services, DNS and DHCP, are used very, very readily, but they can be expanded in ways that can really bring more security to the network. The other factor that really you have to look at when you're considering appliances of that nature is the integration of those appliances. Does your DHCP service talk to your DNS service, or are all the records maintained? Properly and up to date and accurate. Accurate data is very important in those situations. I think the other thing that's really important to note is what Infoblox does beyond what those protocol services do on a standard basis. DNS, for instance, we've added DNS firewall, which gives us the ability to detect malware that's operating in your network. DHCP, we've added DHCP fingerprinting. So now we can control the edge of the network and understand who's signing on with what type of device. We can block those devices that we don't want on our network. We can engage in enforcing network security policies at the network edge. So by taking those protocols, which are pretty basic in nature, and expanding on them and leveraging them for other purposes, now you've got enterprise-grade DNS and DHCP.
And if I can add, this is Arya, if I can add to that, I think the notion of enterprise-grade is an interesting one. I think to contrast that with the experience that you have in your home, where you might be handling, even at its, if you have a smart home with a smart refrigerator and all of the cool gadgets, you might be handling a couple hundred IPs. Imagine that if you're a university, for example, and you're dealing with 30,000 students, many of which live on campus, what we're finding out from many of our customers is that the sheer volume of devices that are trying to get leases via DHCP just so that they can connect. And on the average now, we're going to about 6 or 7 mobile devices per student. And every time they go home for Christmas, by the way, they come back with more devices. What we're finding is that enterprise grade is the key here, in that if you don't have a powerful, high-fidelity device that's serving these up, you're just simply going to have network outages. We've seen even in small companies when employees come in with their laptops, mobile devices, and a couple tablets, etc., their DHCP servers are just laying down and conking out. And so you start to need that kind of performance when the load goes up.
I'd like to add to that. We have some research, and if you start your iPhone, just the beginning of that iPhone powering up, you have 68 DNS requests. If you bring up Facebook, every time you scroll up the page, all of those ads on the right are requesting DNS, are making DNS queries. So you've got to keep up at a pace that's far greater than what was expected in the past.
That may be part of the answer to my next question. And that goes back to the, even at the enterprise grade level of quality that we were talking about just a moment ago, I note that in my network and in many of the networks, frankly, that I've designed, you have a single DNS server, single DHCP server that's able to handle the request from the entire network. I couldn't help but notice the pallet full of Infoblox appliances that is here at HotStage. Mm-hmm. Why are all of the appliances required? And as part of that answer, is each one working separately, or is there some grand scheme that they're all part of?
Well, great question. I think you see a couple things that are at play here. One is the notion of eliminating the single points of failures. So when you see all of those devices that are sitting on the pallets, they're generally configured as what we call HA pairs. They're highly available pairs. One of them is generally a hot standby. You can configure both of them to be working actively. But in your home case or in your home use case, you probably don't need that level of redundancy. If you lose your Wi-Fi and your printer or your network storage or your laptop isn't connecting, you could probably reboot that or go down to the Fry's and get things up and running. And you're probably going to have a couple teenagers that are going to be a little frustrated because they couldn't get to Netflix. But for most part, you're not going to be in a bad situation. If you're a trading floor application, however, and every second, every microsecond is billions of dollars or trades, you can't afford any downtime at all. So the notion of high availability and HA pairs is something that's been around for a long time, and we recommend it. We make it really easy for people to create HA pairs with one cable connecting one of our appliances to another. They immediately share a heartbeat, and they're immediately watching each other. If one goes down, the other one takes over. So one of the things that you'll see here is if you see 26 machines or 26 appliances, most likely 13 of them are working and 13 are in hot standby mode. The other piece, which I think was very interesting, is that we have introduced this notion of a grid, which is the connection of all of these appliances into a single system that allows us to manage all of them from one console. And contrasting that again from the non-enterprise grade kind of DNS and DHCP paradigm, most of the traditional incumbent technologies will force you to manage each one of those zones or each one of those devices individually. That means that if I want to make changes to them, I have to log in individually to each one, set policies, and probably have to use Excel or copy and paste configurations from one to the other. With this notion of the grid that we've introduced, again, as part of our enterprise-grade deployments, it allows one administrator to be able to manage one device or 1,000 devices, and the economic value or the economic investment of administration is still the same.
I think it's important to note that our partners, Deep Dive Networking, have done a great job in architecting the system that Interop will be using. They have a distributed approach for DHCP, so there'll be DHCP services in all the different PEDs. And then the fabulous nature of the grid allows all of that information to be shared and centrally managed. So the IP address management, even though it is a distributed system, is all centralized and very, very visible to the administrator.
Outstanding, gentlemen. Well, we're coming to the end of our time here, but I wanted to ask, I know that a lot of our partners, a lot of companies, are going to be at Interop and have, you know, educational programs or have other things that they're doing at the conference to further train and educate the attendees on what's going on in their segment of the market. Is Infoblox doing any of that kind of effort at Interop?
So we've partnered with Deep Dive Networking, an organization that is actually very involved with us on the training front. Rob Nagy, who runs that organization, has been a trainer at Infoblox, and he's graciously allowed us to partner with him with our presence at Interop. He's the one that's configured the Infoblox appliances for the show network. So there's a lot of educational opportunities. I would suggest checking out Rob Nagy's booth and getting a look at not only our equipment, but as well as the other network elements that he has set up. And he's an excellent educational resource for this topic.
I've known Rob for a long time, and you're absolutely correct. He does a fine job. Well, gentlemen, thank you for being with us. I want to thank Arya Barivani, Vice President for Product Marketing at Infoblox, and Rick Bellina, Senior Product Marketing Manager for Infoblox, for being our guest here on Interop Radio today. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you, Kurt.
You know, making a network the size of InteropNet happen requires a lot of different components, a lot of different services, and a bunch of different skill sets. It's nice to be able to bring some of those to you every night during the hot stage portion of building InteropNet. Now, just to let you know, we're going to be continuing the rest of this week and most of next week with the Hot Stage Diaries. Then we'll be doing regular episodes of Interop Radio. You know, those come to you every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern for most of April. But the last week of April, we're back to a full schedule because we're going to be doing Interop Live. The last week of April, we'll be doing at least three shows a day live from Interop. Now, some of those will be live from the expo floor, some of those will be live from the Network Operations Center, and some of those, well, we frankly haven't figured out exactly where they're going to be yet, but I guarantee you it's going to be somewhere interesting. We're going to have a lot of great guests, a lot of super, super topics. Now, earlier this week, you heard what happened with the wireless network. As you know, if you were with us on Tuesday, we had some wireless networking issues that affected the show. Because this is a look behind the scene, because this is an educational show, I haven't gone back and edited that. If you listen to Tuesday's show, that's page 2 of Hot Stage Diaries, you'll get to hear us, well, warts and all, as we sorted through those wireless problems. Then yesterday, we talked about what happened when we were having those problems, what was done to fix it, and why it's nothing that anyone will have to worry about by the time we get to Interop 2015. Now, late last night, I was back at the hotel when I saw a flurry of email messages come across, and it was obvious that something big was going on with the router for the Interop Net. When I see that, I say, well, you know, there's a story there. Sure enough, there was, and I want to talk to you about that story and get the man behind the story to tell you what happened. We heard from Chris Peacock a little earlier in this episode, and now we're going to show you, well, another peek behind the scenes. I had a chance to talk with Chris just a few minutes ago about what was going on and why it was important. So I'm here with Chris Peacock. So I'm here with Chris Peacock of HP talking about something that went on with the Interop Net at Hot Stage last night. I noticed the emails flying around late last night. Chris, tell me what you had to do. Why was there the need for this flurry of emails?
So the flurry of email was sparked with the fact that it stemmed from an issue with the router here in the warehouse that we troubleshot during the day, and a little further where it impacted at night, where there was a lot less people working here in the warehouse. So when we were looking at the router, we were checking the versions of code, and it's like, all right, you know what, let's update it. So we went ahead and brought in new code right from development into the environment. So we did I triggered the announcement doing the warehouse first, and then went ahead and let the timer tick down, and then went ahead and applied that code to the warehouse router. And then once it was done, it was like, okay, while it was doing its thing, I was logged in checking the other routers at Denver, San Francisco, and Newark, and decided, well, might as well do the updates since it's going to be bouncing anyways. So went ahead and applied it, you know, probably within an hour, updated the 4 core routers within the network.
Now, I'm curious, when you talk to people who manage core stacks, applying new software and rebooting a core router is not something that people do lightly. It in a production network, of course, it's something that tends to have to be scheduled weeks in advance, if at all possible, and as you say, making sure that every possible application is shut down, that no one's going to be applied, tends to be done in the middle of the night in the most active locations. But in this case, was the patch to address a real problem that had existed? Was it simply to make sure that we're demonstrating the most current code? What was the real reason for moving ahead with this patch?
So the reason we decided to move ahead is we patched a year ago, so we were a year out. Looked at the release notes, preliminary release notes, and thought, okay, you know what? Because the warehouse was idle, there may have been one person here. The impact was low. So we went ahead and do it. In most production environments, we probably would not have done this. But because of the environment that the Interop Net brings and the ability to go ahead and try new code in a quasi or basically a production environment yields a great value in return when you can analyze the impacts of it. Like when you can look at, okay, we put this code in. It's not public release code. It's internal code from HP that we put in last night. So we're looking at it from an HP perspective, giving it some loading, some testing in a real-world environment that you usually would not get in an enterprise environment. They would wait for usually like an N-1 type of release.
You know, that brings up an interesting point, because I know installations where they literally haven't touched the code on their core stack in years. Yeah, with the general attitude of, if it ain't broke, don't touch it. The opposite philosophy applies to stuff out on the ends, the edges of the network, where it's considered vital to keep things patched to the most current level. Do you think that people are missing the boat at the core router level? I mean, is that something that, in your mind, people should really look at, you talk about an N-1, but at least staying within easy hailing distance of the most current code revisions? Or is it truly a case of, once you've got something stable, just let it go until something causes it to keel over?
That's more of a cust. I've always left that more to a client dictation and their policies. The bulk of my career I spent in the financial industry, in the banking environments, working with the Tandem Nonstop servers. So we did OS upgrades there once a year, whether we needed to or not, just so we were within the last, you know, we started with an N-1, but ended up, but by the last time we did the last, the 26th node, we were probably N-3 at that stage. But we were at least within the same main thread. So I usually just leave that to a client dictation, but I'm of the same philosophy. If it's not broken, don't touch it, right? We're not fixing anything. Usually we apply a patch to address an issue or bring a feature in that we're looking for. In this environment, because of the dynamic environment, we're able to go ahead and leverage it to bring in alpha or beta, well, probably not alpha, but more beta or pre-QA code to the environment to see how it runs. The other unique thing about interop is hot stage is, 10 days while we're getting everything ready, and then we go to show. Well, when you hit show, you're live and you're running, so that whole enterprise experience gets really hammered. Your 5 nines or 8 nines, whatever number of nines you want to have, really starts to get down to milliseconds in the show environment. So we want to make sure that we're stable for a show, and also we wanted to run, you know, try some new code out to see that we're not injecting any problems.
So our conference attendees who are listening to this, they can be assured that with all the experimentation, when they get to interop, they'll be able to count on their connection to the outside world.
Correct. And, you know, following good practices, I left the code that was previously running there, and it's set that it's all set. So if we have to reboot the device or something, we can do it relatively quickly and roll that code back pretty fast.
Outstanding. Well, Chris, thanks very much for taking the time to come over and be with us here in Interop Radio Broadcast Central.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
So there you see a little bit of what goes on here at HotStage. It's both setting things up to be as stable as possible and doing a little bit of experimentation, bringing those latest versions in for everyone to see whether there are problems, and finding out where the problems might exist here in the warehouse before we get to the floor at Interop. Well, that's it for another page in the Interop Diaries. As a reminder, Interop Diaries are part of Interop Radio, which is in turn the audio version of the Interop community. Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community, will be coming to you April 27th through May 1st, 2015, from the lovely Mandalay Bay Convention Center in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. For more information and to register, please go to www.interop.com and be sure when you register to use that discount code RADIO. Well, I'll be back tomorrow, the same time, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, with the next page in the Interop Diaries. Until then, for all of us here at Interop and Interop Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for listening. Hey, we'll see you tomorrow.